They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. On the Commons with me today is my friend Bill Davis, and everybody else's friend, because every time you're on, Bill, I hear from listeners who say, you've got to clone this guy. You have to clone Bill. He's great.
Well, thank you so much. I sure enjoy it.
So that's why you're always my go-to guy? And
I appreciate that, Sue.
And besides, you have a great sense of humor, so we always laugh and have fun. So that's what it's all about, right? We're going to have some fun, we're going to have some giggles, and we're going to talk about some serious issues, because unfortunately,
yes,
that's what's going on. So what's going on in Texas?
The same old with bad things going on in HOAs. I think I've mentioned before that I have a few cases where we're challenging the ability of an HOA to fine. There's no statutory right, and there shouldn't be, for an HOA to fine, certainly not in this area of Texas. And our position is, if these are contractual relationships, then, you know, it's been long-standing black-letter law that you either have liquidated damages or unenforceable penalties. And something that's called a fine sounds an awful lot like a unenforceable penalty to me. So we're seeking to have fines thrown out in HOAs, and we still have some insurance issues going on with these management companies, and I'd like to see some changes to the law. Maybe we'll get that this legislative session.
So are you working on some proposed legislation for the legislators?
Yes.
Do you have anyone in Texas who's willing to not only carry the bills for you, but actually fight for you?
That I don't know yet. And, of course, the elections don't occur until November, so they'll promise you anything right now, right?
That's true. So are you on an annual – do you have an annual cycle, or is it every 2 years?
It's actually every 2 years, and then the legislature's in session for 140 days, except the governor can call special sessions. So the regular session is 140 days. And after the election – they can file bills as early as November, but that's really the ones that are already sitting there can do that. No action can be taken on them until after, I believe, January the 21st, and that's also when they all get sworn into office. Actually, I didn't check to see if that's a weekday this year, but it's roughly around that. It's probably something like the third Monday or third Tuesday or something like that, but it's roughly around January the 21st. And so after the election, I intend to contact a couple of legislators.
So doing away with fines, that sounds like a great thing.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that they ever had the right to do them. I mean, we're all told that these are contractual relationships, that you knew it when you moved here, that you agreed to it, which, of course, none is really true. The land's just burdened, and all these things often change long after you purchase the property, but it's really been the management companies and HOA attorneys that have pushed this fining agenda. And as you know, and if they still do this in many other states, they use the fines to try to entangle those with assessments so they could then generate junk fees and late fees and things like that that all went to the management company and the HOA attorney.
Right, they
And so, and then they would also use that to deprive you of any ability to vote or run for office or or other things like that. So, yes, I'm working to do away with that. We're seeking a legislative solution. We're also seeking a judicial determination. So,
well, you know, you have my full support on that. I don't think that associations should be. I think it's absolutely terrible. And I don't remember where I was reading it. I just am bogged down with so much stuff going on right now. But I was reading someplace where there might be a question about a developer comes in and builds a development, and the first buyers sign the document, so they have a relationship with the developer and they have the agreement. But does that agreement necessarily translate to the second owner, the third owner, and generations of owners down there? So if you're the 10th owner of a house, can you honestly be held to the terms of the agreement made by the first purchaser and the developer, who hopefully is long gone?
Well, the problem is the restrictive covenants usually provide, you know, the argument that the other side will make is that, hey, you bought the property with the knowledge, or you should have had knowledge, that it was burdened by restrictive covenants, and you're bound by the restrictive covenants.
I understand that that's what they say. And that's what they tell you. But here was the question, was, are you necessarily bound by it? Can you agree to something that you were never a party to in the first place, that you're inheriting it when you buy the property?
Well, unfortunately, it can even change while you have it. And so, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you don't even have any assurances that you get to keep what you have, because especially if you're in a developer-controlled subdivision, the developer can unilaterally change the restrictive covenants. And the people that are seeking to change them usually try to make them more restricted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they aren't usually trying to remove them. So I'm not quite sure how to answer, because the contract, it's a little more sophisticated, typically, at least around here, than buying for the developer. The developer will insulate himself pretty well, so that the developer isn't even the one selling the lots to you. And in fact, in most of the subdivisions around here, I wouldn't say this is universal, because there's certainly smaller subdivisions. But, you know, there was an act several years ago, actually I think it was in the 60s, called the Federal Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act. It was passed because of all the sleazy stuff going on with developments, where developers would make lots of promises and sell lots, and then none of that would ever materialize. And so people, you know, the lot prices were inflated based upon what these people thought was going to happen, like roads going in or utilities or things like that. And the Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act has a number of exceptions. And one of the exceptions is that you know, if it was a subdivision smaller than 100 lots, then it wasn't applicable. And so developers developed phasing, you know, to try and get around the interstate land sales. Oh, well, initially it was under 100, but now we've decided to add this to the land, which, of course, is the plan all the time. That's been knocked down by courts to where, no, you don't get to do that. You're still liable under the original act. Another exception is that if you enter into a contract to purchase a house to be built within 2 years, then it's exempt. And I'm having to paraphrase, because you're bringing back some memories here, and it's been a while since I looked at it. But so what happens is all these subdivisions are, you know, master planned communities. There's no such thing as a new non-HOA subdivision, because the developer wants an HOA and the local government wants an HOA. It's all about disenfranchising the people that live there.
And the homeowners so we don't give them what they want, right?
Correct. And they weren't ever at the table at any rate. They're just, you know, told, oh, this is good for you. So what will happen is you can't actually purchase the lot directly anymore. And it's been that way for a long time. What happens is that you'll have to either the developer, what happens a lot of times is the developer will sell to specified builders or enter an agreement with specified builders, like, you know, they'll be the big ones, you know, Dries, David Weekly, Toll Brothers, whatever, all these, you know, Lennar, all these things that say, okay, you get to build on these lots, and a different builder may be able to build over here. And in some cases, these large, really big home builder companies end up also being the developer. But the bottom line is, you won't be able to buy a lot. All you can do is, if you're buying a new home, by enter into a construction contract for them to build a home within 2 years on the lot that you selected. And so they get around all the disclosure requirements, but at the end of the day, you're just agreeing to purchase the lot, and they independently have control over the restrictive covenants that burden the lot. And so, and of course, your title insurance is going to accept from coverage any type of restriction or lack of restriction on the property. So you really, you know, when you say, is it binding? The problem is that even the original person, they get the physical lot, but it comes with whatever restrictions have been imposed on it, and there's no promise that they won't change or that they won't change after you purchase it or won't change before you close the transaction. I mean, it's a pretty shady, the whole thing's kind of shady. So, yeah, it can be binding on the people afterwards because they enter a contract to buy the lot, but the restrictions simply burden it. They don't negotiate the restrictions.
If we're going to be looking at potentially changing things, I mean, there seems to be a bit of a problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we're looking at changing things at this point, and that's an area I think that needs to be done. I think you're right in that the developer wants it, and, you know, everybody wants it. The local municipal government wants it. The banks want it. Everybody wants it. Everybody except the consumer. And there's more of us than there are of them. And we just roll over and say, oh, okay, it's good for us. It's going to protect our property value, so it must be good. If it hurts, it must be good for us, right? It's painful, guys. It's beyond painful. It's not good for you.
And they've never been able to show that it protected any property values except for the management companies, HOA attorneys, and the developer. It's never, never have they shown that it protects the values for the individual homeowners in there. I still think back to ours, where the HOA attorney was claiming, what we thought was to be able to have water to our house. And the HOA attorney actually took a position and stated in open court that we were improving the value of our property at the expense of all of our neighbors. It was the most inane argument, one of the most inane arguments I've ever heard. It's like, well, wait a minute. That means anybody that's going to build anything on their property, are they improving their property at the expense of their neighbors because their property is worth more and their neighbors didn't go up? That's a stupid argument. And how much is a piece of property worth if you can't actually live in it or reside in it because it didn't have water? I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Just, yeah, but it's a stupid collectivism type of thing that we all must be the same. And, you know, it's just, it was problematic. Back on the finding thing, I would like to add, we may have an opportunity to bring in another dimension to the you know, outrageous HOA finding and behavior. I've actually had to withdraw from representing a client. I really didn't want to do this, but, you know, unfortunately, when someone asks you to represent them, you need their participation. And, you know, if the other side wants to depose them or serves me with discovery that I have to respond to, like ask questions that, you know, only the client's going to know, it requires the client to participate. And I had a client that literally just disappeared off the map. I don't think that they died, but I could not reach them by text messages, voicemail, email, letters. I know there's something else in there I forgot, but there's just no means of communication that he had previously used. He simply wasn't responding to them, and I couldn't. So the bottom line is I had to withdraw from representation, and I believe this may be a case where, in the end, the HOA, this would be a good case for maybe Dr. Solomon or other people that study, you know, psychology or psychiatry to be involved with as an expert. I think the person has become so withdrawn from getting just a barrage of these threatening letters every day in the mailbox. It's either every day or at least once a week. They've claimed fines. Let's just put it this way. I'm sure it's over 100 grand by now.
That's abusive.
They claim an entitlement to fines for?
That's abusive.
What's that? Oh,
that's
abusive. Abusive. And the idea that an HOA can do this to begin with is, I mean, I'm getting a little off topic, but Texas, in its constitution, says you got three branches of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. Well, which one are you putting an HOA in? Because you've got these, you know, morons sitting there, you know, that ego-driven, that they're in power and in control, claiming an entitlement to interpret the law, to assess their own penalties and to assess financial penalties against people, and then ultimately to foreclose on their homes to collect it. They'll entangle it with something else to claim an entitlement to foreclose, because, you know, Texas, you supposedly can't foreclose solely for fines. But all they have to do is come up with one other little thing and say, well, it's not solely due to fines. And then they'll try to take the house and collect all that money. So it's a way of stealing 100% of the equity of your house. And yet this industry is sitting out there claiming, oh, this protects your home values.
Yeah.
Not for the homeowner, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So, but back to this character, I hope he, you know, is able to pull through. I mean, I've tried everything to reach him. I can't, but I really have to believe that, it's had an effect, because I know it, you know, it was draining on me before to just, you know, how people complain about, it's not just a complaint. You don't want to go to your mailbox. You don't want to get the mail.
Yeah.
You don't want to interact with people.
Yeah.
The Captain Clower's wife,
yeah.
She wasn't responding to any letters because her husband was in Iraq. But this is from the HOA itself constantly sending letters. I think for every letter, the management company will send three letters whenever it sends one out, because it gets paid for each letter. And so it will proclaim, oh, your grass is too tall, or the shrub needs trimming, or you need to replace the dirt. And the reason it's dirt is because it's under a tree and it gets shaded and you can't expect a grass to grow there. I mean, you need to replace your dirt with grass. You need to sod there. Well, it's not going to work because it's a nice, beautiful tree, provides shade, and nothing can grow there. So, but I think that's the case. It's not over yet. I did have to withdraw, but I will certainly be happy to support, especially if I can get a hold of this guy in the meantime, any effort to go after that HOA for mental anguish, for what they've done. And I do the HOA corporation through its agents, which brings me to another point. Well, to sum that up, the bottom line is I do think that there, you know, I've seen what Solomon refers to as the HOA syndrome. I've seen it in people.
Yes.
I see how it affects their life.
Yes.
How the management companies make it sound like the entire neighborhood is against you, when in fact they do everything they can to keep this information secret so nobody else in the neighborhood realizes how large the scope of abuse is in the neighborhood. But this is one where I definitely would like to see the management company and, if possible, the board members personally held responsible for this kind of stuff. But, you know, I couldn't do it in this one because I lost the participation of the client.
You know,
it's
Bill,
still possible.
It sounds like psychological operations when you go to war and you have these PSYOP guys who are professionals at doing this. In fact, I've had one on the show, and I've been talking to him for years. And he's retired military, and that's what he did, psychological operations. And the stories he told me about what he did in his HOA here in Virginia, but he was afraid of coming on. And his wife would not let him come on the show and talk about it until they had sold their house and moved out of state and had no more ties to Virginia before he would come on and talk about the stuff they do. But in a war, to wear down your enemy, in a war, these people go after them, and it's relentless. It's all the nitpicky little stuff. It's noise. You know, it's just constant, and it is abusive. It is abusive.
Yeah, it is.
So we go back to Ward Lucas's book, Neighbors at War, and this, it fits perfectly in there. Psychological operations, we're just going to constantly hammer at you. You're going to get a daily letter, five letters a day. You're going to get the calls. You're going to get this. You're going to get that. We won't come and talk to you because heaven knows you might have a gun and we want to protect our perfect little lives. But we're going to just harass the hell out of you as we keep going through.
Yeah, they don't actually call this guy. They send letters. But, you know, one of the reasons for foreclosure, or their basis for foreclosure, was they went in to his backyard and cut down a tree that somebody didn't like.
Oh.
Okay, it wasn't him. Cut down a tree, and then demanded that he send him, started sending him a letter saying that they were aware that a tree was removed, and that the restrictive covenants obligate him to have to replace a tree that's removed. Okay, well, that's kind of funny because it also required permission to remove the tree, and there was no, you know, no such permission was granted, and they certainly didn't authorize him to go in his backyard and cut down the tree. But they added the cost of cutting down the tree so that now it wasn't just fines, it was, you know, costs of enforcement or something like that. And, of course, they didn't have the meetings that they were supposed to have beforehand and give notice of that, that they were going to even discuss that beforehand. But so they went and cut down the tree. Then they demanded that he incur the cost of replacing it with hardwoods. But that he had to get their approval for doing that, of course. And then when they didn't get a response from him, they filed suit for foreclosure, seeking an order permitting them to non-judicially foreclose on this property. And it was all caught up in fine. This is the one where initially it was around $3,500 for the fines and the cost of cutting down the tree. And then a few days before the foreclosure sale, they demanded $21,000 to be delivered to the law firm.
Whoa.
And then now it's over, you know, it's like 100 plus. So
it's
going to get ugly.
This guy's done a bunk on you before, because it seems to me you couldn't reach him in the past and you got back with him.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate. You said it. I mean, people are afraid of going to the mailbox. They're afraid of answering the door. They're afraid of answering the phone. It may not be the association calling you, but somebody's going to call you and hang up. And somebody's going to, you know, something's going to happen. It's just crazy. I had a woman contact me. She lived in a condominium. In condominiums, the condominium association has a key to your room, to your unit. And so whenever she went anywhere, she put everything she owned in a suitcase and dragged it around with her because she was afraid of leaving it in her home.
Yeah.
And every time she went back in, things would be moved. She would put a plate on. Somebody's gone in there. Little things. Nobody stole anything, as far as I know. They just moved things. The lamp would be from this table to that table. You know, the pillow would be from the couch to the... Just... trying to make her feel like she was losing her mind.
Yeah.
And,
well,
I mean, this sort of stuff should not be happening in this day and age.
Right. Well, it frustrates me because I think this is a really good case. And I've, you know, spent a lot of time looking, analyzing a couple of things. And this is a perfect case for abuse regarding fines. Okay. I mean, I don't care what they claim that they had a right to do. I would love to see them try to explain to a judge how they believe that they were entitled to collect, you know, to charge someone $100,000 in fines. And it'd be a perfect case for that. I think it still can be, because if they do foreclose and they demand, you know, $100,000 or more for him to redeem the property, the issue is going to come up again. So, it makes you a little bit frustrated, but you can't get angry with people that you think may be. You know, I'm not a psychologist, but as a practicing attorney, I still have to kind of make sort of gut instinct feelings about things with respect to settlement and how someone might react and how, you know, or even if you're going to have a deposition, what might cause them to blurt out a few things that they wouldn't have otherwise blurted out. And, I think this is a case where the guy's he's gotten I don't know if despond is the right word, but it sort of made him kind of robotic. He's not really responding to anything that he needs to be responding to in life, mail, calls from his attorney, you know, things like that.
But people go into hiding, and you're absolutely right. This is something Gary Solomon has been talking about forever.
Right.
And stress and the physical effects on stress. And, you know, if you take what's happening with just these little things, Bill, and you blow it up, look at how much health care is costing us and how much of and how much of that starts right in an HOA.
Yeah.
How many diseases are caused because people are just being hounded and picked on and abused? It's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, back in the 70s when they passed the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the preamble to that talks about, you know, what it does to marriages, families, health, and I can't verbatim restate it, but I actually use that language a lot of times because, you know, Community Associations Institute, their public policies, they're trying to promote that the FDCPA shouldn't apply to HOAs or to management companies. And yet, why shouldn't it apply? That's absolutely the business these people are in. And in fact, they're some of the worst kind of debt collectors in the world. They create false debt, like fines, and then try to entangle that. And in fact, you know, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act would prevent them from being able to do that. So, of course, they don't want it to apply. But it's for the reasons stated in that act and more that those kind of conduct is prohibited in the context of debt collection. I do think it affects people's health. It affects how they work at their job. And we know that there's been more than a few shootings and killings tied to, provoked by what's going on in these HOAs. And I suspect there's a lot more of them where the HOA, its management company, and its board are the root of the problem than what we, know. And so we need to work on taking the appearance of power away from these entities.
I haven't talked to Gary for a while. I hear that he's so totally frustrated and fed up with the fact that the medical profession has not embraced his theories, has not looked at them, has not started to participate, trying to determine whether there is a cause between what's happening to you, your physical problems, your medical problems, and what's happening in your HOA, in your private life, and whether there's a correlation. I think he's frustrated about that, but I really think, Bill, that there's so many pieces of the puzzle that we've been looking at. We haven't been able to put them together. I mean, I look at them and I think there's no way that this is ever going to work. You're never going to be able to make something this grotesquely unfair be part of a quote-unquote community. I mean, it's just not going to work. Everybody just looks at the legal aspect. They look at this part. They look at that part. They look at one piece of the puzzle, but they're not looking at the whole picture.
You had asked what was happening earlier. I do have another thought, by the way. I need to follow up on that earlier case, but you had asked what else was happening. Well, I live in a subdivision where the HOA.
Lucky you.
I've been trying to get away from it for several years, but frequently the homes have been unmarketable because of the existence of the HOA and because of the actions of it. But there's a big battle that's been going on as to whether there's still a developer or who has declarant rights, because this controls who can add land to the subdivision, who has unilateral control over the restrictive covenants, the control of the board of the HOA, and a bunch of other things. Now, I'll have more news, later in the week that will be good to share for a different occasion. But right now, and you'll find this in all over the U.S., it's the way these things are set up. They're typically a Class A, Class B membership, where the developer has Class B, and the homeowners are led to believe, oh, you're Class A. Aren't you the greatest? You're Class A. The poor developer here is Class B. You're numero uno. Well, the Class A members if they have any presence on the board at all, it's always a minority presence, and the Class B member, everything else. Well, because of the lawsuits we had a few years ago, there was an agreement entered into where the Class A members control the finance, Class A board members control the finance, and the Class B member controls some other things, and only the Class A members are subject to, architectural committee review, and then the Class B member is the one who appoints the architecture member. They're not elected. With that background, what's happened is there was another lawsuit launched. It's been nothing but lawsuits since 2005. There's another lawsuit launched to determine whether the original, whether not the original, this is like a fifth, declarant is really the declarant or not, and whether declarant rights even exist anymore, which will really change quite a few things in the subdivision, whatever the court comes up with. But here's what I'm excited about. There are special provisions that, all the people that love being the police and enforcing you, enforcing things against you and threatening you. They're always about reading the rules and didn't you read the rules? You knew it when you moved in and all this other nonsense. Well, none of them have really read the provisions and the bylaws of the restrictive covenants that dictate how votes are cast or how they are to be done in our subdivision. And I believe what's going to happen, and without saying more right now, what's going to happen and what I'm looking forward to is there's an election of Class A members that takes place later in the week. In fact, the court assigned a receiver specifically to count the things. Nobody's going to trust the management company, thankfully, and nobody's going to trust the Class B members to count them. And there's a big war among all the other homeowners, too. But here's the fun part. The Class A members control all the finances. So if nobody can be elected, and that's what I'm predicting what's going to happen, then the HOA shouldn't be able to write checks or do anything financially, and I couldn't be happier about that. Now, the big issue is taking control away from the management company, because it's certainly going to continue writing checks to itself and all of its affiliated vendors, and things of that nature. So, but I'll know later in the week whether the HOA will have been rendered dysfunctional completely or not. And I'm so looking forward to it. And I know that terrorizes other people. What I can't get is what we've tried talking to a few other homeowners, and they're just so convinced they have to have an HOA.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's going to stop somebody from a purple house.
Yeah.
I've heard that so many times. I don't know what the big issue is, the purple house. There aren't any purple houses anywhere. I mean, I don't think you could find one in the county I'm in. But the bottom line is,
they're beautiful,
that
Bill.
Fear, well, that fear is kind of irrational.
Yeah, it is.
And anyone can enforce restrictive covenants. There's not a prohibition against color. They're all required to, at least in this area, to be masonry. And I don't think I've ever seen any purple brick. But the bottom line is, they're so adamant that they have to have one to protect themselves. And if you look around, not only has it not protected anything, it's been the primary cause of people not being able to sell anything, even for the developer. And it's like, this is the wrong model. That's when we have, should have a constitutional government as opposed to rule by corporation, because this is so dysfunctional, it's just beyond the pale. And it's not even working for the developer. So it'll end up being used against him.
Don't you love it when a plan comes together, Bill?
Well, it's kind of interesting, and I hope it's going to cause the court to rethink a few things, and I think there's going to be some of us that are going to jump in. I mean, I have the ability to intervene at any time, and if they're not able to elect them, refuse to allow anything to go on, because that's what everybody agreed to, right? There's nothing that says that the HOA has to continue forever. And so I look forward to it being rendered dysfunctional, but we'll see what happens. It'll be exciting to see how they – I won't tell you the part just yet about what they're doing wrong, but they'll do it wrong because they will do it wrong, and they'll be made aware of it at the end of the week, and then they're going to go, uh-oh, well, now what? It'll be interesting. That's the best I can say. But back to our earlier case.
Before we go there, don't forget the Ferran case. They were not able to extinguish the association, or it was going to be too hard. So what they did was they gutted the whole thing and rendered it totally, totally useless. They can collect money to maintain a one-acre lot and buy insurance, and that's all they're allowed to do. And all of a sudden, from a war zone, it went to a neighborhood where people are out there working together. So the HOA does not help you, and property values went up.
Yeah.
When the HOA kind of disappeared.
Yeah, because it's otherwise you're just, like this guy's, in the case I was talking about earlier, he's expected to fund a management company that spends 100% of its time, at least with respect to him, threatening him, accusing him, demanding, fines and things like this. And it's demeaning, debilitating, and annoying and harassment. I don't know what else to put on the negative side there, but it's pretty ugly. And nobody should be asked to fund or expected to fund something like that. It's absurd.
I agree. So going back to your...
Well, going back, how about going to accountability? Because, you know, this industry is about accountability and you're responsible and, you know, they want to talk about rights and responsibilities, except the HOA has all the rights and you have all the responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to see the management company, the HOA attorneys held accountable. And
yes.
One thing that should happen, and I would like to see this legislatively, is to untie the insurance coverage. Did not allow the management companies to have tying arrangements with the insurance coverage for their clients, number one. And do not allow the HOA, actually prohibit the HOA from providing coverage for the management company. Because what happens is the management company comes in, and, of course, it can get, you know, oh, they can give them pins, awards, talk about what leaders they are. These people will believe anything, and they're so easily manipulated, it's just not even funny. But the management company will get the board to sign off on an agreement, and
yes.
The agreement will provide that the board, that the HOA will pay any judgment assessed against the management company, and that it will provide insurance coverage for the management company. And then you'll find out that the insurance coverage is actually being sold to it by the management company or an affiliate of the management company. There's all sorts of thinking back to financial issues, and something we studied back in the 80s when I was working for one of the big eight consulting companies back then. You know, it's called control fraud. You do not allow one entity to be in control of all these different aspects of your business, the money collection, the banking, the insurance, the accounting, the audit function. All these functions are being handled by one entity, which is about, it's as unlicensed and as crooked as you can get. Most of those management companies have done what they've, the contracts that they've drawn up to present to HOAs basically is, well, this would be called embezzlement, except we've asked you to sign a contract to allow us to embezzle from you. And, you know,
that sounds so absurd.
What's that?
I said that sounds so absurd, but it's absolutely true.
It is. And, you know, they'll refuse to provide their own clients a bank statement. So the clients won't even know that the accounts aren't in the name of the HOA. It's like the management company operating account. The management company will give them a financial statement that is not the bank statement. So how is the HOA treasurer supposed to do their job of reconciling things, you know, things of this nature?
They just rubber stamp everything they're given. That's what they do.
Right, because the management company claims to be the advisor to these people as well. These people should be supervising the management company. So it's, you know, it's problematic. But how many counts of embezzlement and fraud have we seen? I mean, it's like a daily thing in the paper. People taking millions of dollars, you know, no big deal. They go away for just a couple of years and they're back out again. I believe that, and I think we mentioned this before, but the management, there needs to be a law prohibiting, well, for example, as an attorney, I cannot contract with my client to be responsible for malpractice that I've committed. Okay, I mean, that's one of the differences between a professional and whatever these management companies are. They claim to be professional. Yeah, well, they're professional, all right, but not in the kind of way that we think of as normally as professionals. But, you know, they shouldn't be in the business of selling insurance to their clients. They shouldn't be on the same insurance policy. They certainly should not own the insurance policy, which is what happens with a number of these larger entities where the parent company or the management company owns the insurance policy under which coverage is being extended to the management company, the management company's clients. That shouldn't happen. You can't get rid of the management company because there'll be a tying arrangement. Like, you can only keep the insurance so long as you also employ the management company. Well, gosh, the management company has an incentive to stir the pot, okay? The management company is not at really any risk of liability for whatever it's done because it's contracted with the HOA board, so the HOA board has to identify the management company for, you know, any judgment against the management company. So, and by the way, the management company is not really independent. They're also in the business of making the records. I actually heard an HOA attorney argue in court that the management company had no stick in the game.
Really?
Well, that's absolutely false. The management company has every incentive to doctor records, create records, whatever it wants to dictate the outcome that it wants. It does have a stick in the game. Because people don't know, the parent company owns the policy, or the parent company may have to pay a deductible that isn't being disclosed to other entities. Of course, the management company has an interest. It's not really an independent management company. It's completely intertwined and entangled with the insurance policy and the contract it has with the HOA as to coverage and indemnifications.
You know what I love about having you on, Bill?
What's that?
You always, always make me think. You always have a different way of looking at things, and you always have pieces of the puzzle that you pull in. And when you're through talking about it, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm realizing that this is an even bigger mess than I thought.
It is a huge issue, and, you know, a lot of people are talking about voting and voting rights, and I think we need to be realistic. This industry doesn't care about your voting or voting rights or anything like this. What they care about is control and money, because control leads to the money. And so if you look at most of the things are motivated by control and money, if you focus on interrupting the flow of both of those, I think a lot of the other stuff will actually straighten itself out, because there's no, you know, if they can't profit from some of this stuff, then, you know, why are they going to go in there and waste time arguing about who gets to vote or who gets to run for office or any of this other stuff? It's, you know, the things that we think of in a social compact as opposed to a legal contract. And I do believe it's all about the money, and economics is where you have to fight this industry.
It's the last I heard, it's gone up to a $95 billion annual industry. But it seems to be jumping by billions annually.
Yeah. And does that include the embezzlement?
That's always been my question. What about, you know, Bill, we talk about embezzlement, and we talk about actually finding that management companies and board members have embezzled tens of thousands or millions of dollars, and we find those. I think that those are just, excuse me, I think that those are just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's a whole lot more money that's missing. But there are a lot of ways that management companies and managers in particular have been stealing from homeowners, from
sure.
individuals. Tons and tons and tons of money, and we don't know about it.
Right.
It's
not even on the books of the HOA, so it's all direct from management company to homeowner.
Right.
Management company's keeping the books. The HOA will never see that. All they see is things going in their account. And the management company agreements I've seen provide that they can receive the money and they don't have to even deposit a bank account. They can pay themselves or use it to pay anything else if they want to. It's pretty appalling.
There was a woman who called me years ago, and she was really upset. She had worked very, very hard, and she'd finally bought a condo in a blue collar neighborhood, and she got a delinquent notice from the management company. Now the management company would send out a monthly bill, and the bill was for whatever the assessment was, plus 3 days, 5 days from the previous month, plus interest and penalties and all of that. And she argued she was not going to pay the penalties and the interest. She would pay the 3 days. And I said, but you don't owe the 3 days. Oh, yes, I do. Because I actually acquired the unit on the 27th or the 25th or whatever the date was. And I said, but you don't owe that. You've already paid for it. No. I haven't paid for it. I've only paid for and the first bill that she got was for the first month. And this just escalated. And she argued with them about the penalties. And they just kept increasing and increasing. And she says, you didn't even tell me about it. Well, what people don't realize, and especially if you're not a particularly savvy buyer, a sophisticated buyer, what people don't realize is that when a realtor schedules your settlement date, they'll schedule it a few days before the end of the month. The reason for that is because you will owe the interest for those 3 days, 5 days, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And you have to bring that to the settlement table because then everything is paid in arrears. They don't want you to have to bring a big chunk of money, but they don't want to sort of leave themselves too short. So that's why it's only like 3 or 5 days before the end of the month. And that is prorated. So the seller has already paid that. At the settlement table, the buyer is charged for the 3 days or 5 days or however long it is for the condo assessment, and that is then on their form goes to the seller. But it took me years to get her to realize that she had paid for that not once but twice, and these people were just continually adding penalties and charges and all of that. You know damned well that never went to the association. It went directly in their pockets. The board didn't know anything about it. It was a battle with a young girl who was very, very proud of having worked hard and bought her first place. And yet these, I can't even say the word on the radio, on the air. These people are just unbelievable, Bill.
Yeah. I view it as really organized crime that has a public face. I mean, you know, they actually have lobbyists. They do a lot of stuff kind of sort of out in the open, and they'll have a business front. But it's, and then not knowing the relationships with the management company and, you know, garbage services or electricity being provided or internet or any of these other types of things. And they're out there telling you, oh, we searched around. We found the best deal. This is who we recommend. Or we recommend you use this company because they handle a lot of HOA insurance. And it turns out, that's a subsidiary of the same parent company, the management company. And nobody tells you that stuff. It's like, well, maybe they're not as independent as they'd lead you to believe. I don't think it helps expecting, that I don't believe there's any such thing as the right person in charge of an HOA because it's not a model of governance that the founders of this country ever, they were trying to get away from stuff like this. This is not something anyone would ever support. So it doesn't help trying to find the, quote, right people to be in charge of these. And as a practical matter, you have to rely on, most of the time, you're just going to get people who just don't know any better. They're simply reciting the same mantra that they've heard over and over again, HOAs preserve property values. And then they're going to take advice from these management companies that are happy to tell them, oh, they're a leader because they're a leader of their community because they're on the board of the HOA. And so it's going to take statutory, it's going to take legislative action to try and disrupt the pillaging that these management companies engage on against their own client and against the involuntary members of that client. There's going to have to be legislative action, and it's going to have to be, penalties for doing it. And the penalties can't be paid by the client. They have to be paid by the management company or the HOA attorney for their actions. The idea that the client should indemnify the management company for a judgment against it is just nonsense. Every other professional out there, or not every one of them, but most of the professionals out there, if they want insurance, they carry their own insurance. They don't expect their clients to indemnify them for everything that they do.
What concerns me, Bill, is everything we're talking about is perpetuating this whole concept. We're just tweaking it. And I don't think there are enough tweaks in there that are going to render these harmless. And that, I think, is what you want.
Right. Well, but the idea is start affecting it economically so that they can't, because they know how much money their client has, right? They're the ones keeping the books and everything. But if you start making it less profitable for these management companies, or you start cutting off the just hemorrhaging of money from the HOAs, the management companies and attorneys, then there's going to have to be some changes made. Yeah, I hear you.
We keep going back. I've been doing this for such a long time, and for such a long time, if we could only do this, and if we could only do that, and if we only could do that. But while we're focusing on this, that, and the other, there's all of this other stuff over on the other side of the table that's just going by unnoticed. Nobody realizes it. Nobody understands it. You know, nobody sees the connection. It's like what you were talking about earlier, how, you know, the management company, the whole thing is tied together. It's the same company, whether it's insurance, whether it's trash, whether it's cable. You know, all of this stuff, we're just looking at one part of something. We're just looking at embezzlement, but we're not looking at all the hidden other ways that people are being charged, and there's no way we'll ever know how much money has been fraudulently stolen from individuals. We will never know that.
Probably not. Maybe on individual cases we'll learn more information, but I guarantee you that it's only a matter of time before you have a natural disaster, especially in, I live in a 5-state region, it's like the most volatile environmental. California has fires and earthquakes. Okay, well, we have fires, we have lightning, we have hail, we have rain, flooding. You know, we have a few more of the of those types of things. I think it's like Georgia, Texas, Louisiana, Missouri, Mississippi. So it's like that area, and I know Florida does too. But you know what people don't realize right now is these management companies that are selling, or their affiliates that are selling the insurance coverage. That insurance coverage, they have their own actuaries in there where they're trying to they're doing a different type of risk assessment, and they're collecting, first of all, they will, when the insurance premium is paid, it's going to get paid to another affiliate of the management company's parent, for example, which, so that nobody knows how much the actual insurance is or whether the insurance actually gets paid, because the insurance policy will actually be owned by the parent of the management company, the holding company. Okay, at best the HOA client is going to be a named insured if they're lucky to be dead. They will be given a certificate of insurance, which is a little equivocal because it leads people to believe that the HOA actually owns a policy when it does not. And the other thing that's deceptive about it is, in many times, it may show, just pick a number, $1 million coverage is a really common coverage amount, for example, for D&O policies, and property insurance, there's some common numbers like $2 million and $5 million and things like that. There's some regular repeating numbers that show up there a lot. But the bottom line is, what they don't understand is the insurance company that has sold them coverage, not a policy, sold them coverage. Number one, they may not actually be covered at all. Number two, and it's hard for them to get the information because they're not the owner of the policy. Number two, when a disaster strikes, that's when people are going to learn that the same coverage was being sold multiple times.
Yeah.
The management company or its administrator was collecting insurance premiums for the same coverage.
Yes.
There weren't 31 million dollar policies. There was one $1 million policy that the management company or its affiliate sold coverage under 30 different times and collected 30 different premiums. But when the disaster hits, and it will, it's just a matter of time, and they find out, oh, there's only $1 million coverage. When you add all these people up, they thought, you know, individually, they thought they each had $1 million coverage. There should have been $30 million coverage, and they paid premiums that collectively should have totaled for $30 million of coverage.
That's,
but in fact, they only have $1 million of coverage.
That's totally criminal, and it should be illegal. Bill, we're way out of time. Thank you thank you so much. Thank you. You've given us so much food for thought. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.